For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with our weekly look at the world of non-league football. So I'm recording this a little out of sync, minutes after Boreham Wood's valiant effort saw them bow out of the FA Cup to Premier League opposition. They certainly showed us why this was the first time they had conceded in the competition this season, and why they are the meanest defence in the National League. If they can shake the disappointment, you wouldn't bet against Luke Garrard's side ending this season with promotion. They are that hard to beat. So much to celebrate, but the world is in difficult times. So a slight change of pace with the show this week that shows the depth of appeal and reach of non-league football. First up, we speak to a manager who has left a number two role in the Football League to return to the non-league game. He served so well as a young manager. Lee Bradbury's no veteran now, but with added knowledge, insight and experience, he hopes he has the magic ingredient to turn Eastleigh's setup off the field into one that can challenge in the National League on it. My next guest is somebody I met many years ago as a rival fan in non-league. We've been friends pretty much ever since, and he's got some fingers in some very interesting pies. Wealdstone fan Roger Slater is part of a team bringing a new print publication to non-league fans with some exciting articles by the fans for the fans that otherwise wouldn't get seen or heard and are certainly worth a read. One includes info about the Football and War Network, bringing together military and local history and the beautiful game. Roger is also part of a seminar being held at Wealdstone that also includes our own at FA Cup fact file, Mr. Philanets, in April, and I'm sure that will interest many non-league fans too. Rounding off the show, Matt Badcock, editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, is back with a roundup of the week's news and what we can expect to read in this weekend's edition. So plenty to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's start this week with a new man in a new role. It's 5 weeks since the departure of Ben Strevens from Eastleigh, and this week the National League has unveiled their new manager. No stranger to non-league, no stranger to the local area, and no stranger to taking control at one of the smaller names in a division and making them bigger. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show Lee Bradbury, new manager at Eastleigh FC. Welcome back, Lee.
How you going? You okay?
I'm good. Well, I can hear you're on the move. I'd imagine a very, very busy couple of days already under your belt.
Yeah, it has been. But, you know, it's the way we like it. Yeah, I think, gone in Monday training and Tuesday, lads, had a day off Wednesday. But give me a chance to sort of get a few bits sorted out. Yeah, we're trying to improve things behind the scenes and on the pitch. But it takes time, as you know. And, you know, it's going to be exciting, hopefully, times ahead. So, yeah, I've enjoyed the week.
And we obviously know you from your 7 years at the helm at Havant and Waterlooville, Eastbourne Borough. Mm. But then you flew the nest and you've been a number two at Crawley Town in the league. Again, pulling up trees there too with resources you had available. Now, but I understand non-league has never been far from your mind or focus.
It's something, certainly Eastleigh Football Club, being I'm 20 minutes away from Eastleigh. It's an attraction as far as a club that's always tried to be progressive and trying to get out of the league that it's in. And, you know, even though it's not the club of old or 4 years ago or whatever it was that Stu Donald was here, it's still a fantastic club with good people behind the scenes and trying to progress. And that's a great attraction for me. The club is sort of matching my ambitions as far as trying to do things right and trying to make sure that we are producing players and, obviously, the league position could be better at the moment. But, you know, we have a small squad at this moment in time, but it's something I'm excited about trying to build a new one.
Yeah. What about your time as a number two? My AWOL co-presenter, Dave Anson, often talks about being a very different nature, being a number two to being top dog. Have you learnt more being a number two to come back to be a number one again?
Yeah, I think about working with Yemsey at Crawley, he's old school. He won't mind me saying that. He's proud of that, and you know, I think that's it's got some very good positives within it. And but he's a very good man manager. He knows how to get the best out of people, and he has good relationships with his players as well. Yeah, and I've learned things over the last couple of years, 2.5 years, whatever it is. Definitely, it's certainly a more relaxed role being an assistant manager, if you like. But you know, I think it's it was time for me to sort of become number one again. But having said that, I really enjoyed the number two role and the club, Crawley Town. I thought it was fantastic. We had some great times there, beating the likes of Leeds and bringing in Max Wise and selling him for £1 million, and we got him for free. You know, things like that are what gives you a buzz as a coach and a manager.
The timing now then, going back to being a manager, is that just an opportunity that has arisen?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, wasn't actively looking, but this came up and I had a conversation with the director of football, Eastleigh, and it moved on pretty quickly. So, you know, I had to make a decision after the game on Saturday that, you know, I wanted to move on. And to be fair to Crawley, they were excellent. They tried to keep me. They tried to offer me a better contract, etc. It just wasn't about, it wasn't a financial situation for me. It was a situation where I wanted to sort of get back into the main role, and this one was available.
Yeah, and so you said about working under John Yems. I know you've got Jason Bristow staying on board with first team coaching and his role of head of youth. Have you got other backroom staff coming in to join you to help you now you're Eastleigh?
Well, it's something I'm looking at the moment. Just having a good look at the football club at the moment, see strengths and the weaknesses of the club and the more importantly, the team. And, you know, it's something that we may address in weeks to come. But at this moment in time, certainly going to keep Jason Bristow involved. Ross Flitney, the goalkeeping coach. They're two fantastic lads. They've got a lot of experience at this level. And local lads that are very well liked as well. And I can understand why now I'm in the building.
Yeah, again, two guys that I've known for a very long time. You mentioned about the league table position. You come in, what, the club's 14th in the division. You're 12 points above the relegation zone, so hopefully safe. Is it then a case that you maybe have a little more time to learn about the players and what you've got at your disposal before planning for next term?
Certainly, yeah. I'm saying to the players today, you know, I want this to be a mentality. It's going to be a mentality change at the club. You know, I want it to be a winning. And, you know, the players that want to work hard and try to improve day in and day out will stay. They will get offered contracts. Whether they stay or not is down to them. But, you know, I want people that are willing and to work hard and to play with freedom and express themselves and entertain the fans. And that's something that my philosophy is certainly sort of got a DNA of that, and I want the boys to be very energetic and fit and to enjoy their football.
And I think that's something whenever I've seen interviews with you, interviewed you and talked to other people about you, you're a very organised person, but also very straightforward as well. You just want some honest players putting in the hours and the commitment for you.
Of course, and you know, at the end of the day, we're all football fans. So I want to watch a good game of football. I want to see people winning the ball. I want to see people making tackles, passing the ball, shooting with intent, and being exciting to watch. You know, we need to make. I mean, it's a great fan base. It's ever growing at Eastleigh. At the moment, we're getting an average of 2,400. I think it is every game, depending on who we play. Obviously, because there's big clubs in the league. That can bring that up quite considerably. So, yeah, we all want to watch a good game of football. And I just need to take the shackles off the players a little bit. I feel like it's no fault of anyone that the confidence levels have dropped a little bit at the club. And it's up to me now to come in and try and implement my ideas and the confidence to the players.
Yeah, and Eastleigh have certainly established themselves in the National League. Yeah, what, there since 2014, I think. And next term, have you been given any targets as to where the club needs to be?
No, I haven't been given no targets as yet. You know, we're going to sit down at the end of the season and put a plan together. We're already starting on like a recruitment plan for next season, and what I see is going to take the football club forwards. As far as the budget or where they expect to finish, no. But I will put my own pressures on myself and the team to finish as high as we can.
Yeah, and it's already a very competitive division this season. But you look at the clubs battling at the top of the National South and National North, the resources, the momentum they've all got, and desire as well. And then you look at the drop zone for the Football League. There's probably eight or nine clubs that may be still in the mix there, and all clubs that coming into the National League are going to make it even tougher for any club next season.
Yeah, of course, you know, but don't forget we'll be losing the likes of maybe like your Chesterfield, your Wrexhams. We've got some big clubs in there that are doing ever so well at the moment. So, you know, we've got a couple of big hitters, for want of a better word, will leave the division, and some big hitters will come in. So it's never easy. There's always one that surprises everyone, and hopefully we can be that team next season.
Yeah, and I mentioned you stayed on top of non-league. Obviously, your son Harvey has been banging home goals for Oxford City in the National South. That could be an interesting match-up next season if they get promoted.
Yeah, it could do. I've managed against him before, to be fair. So, as he knows, I don't do him any favours when we play against him. So, it's about winning, as I said, and bragging rights in the house after the game.
I can imagine. Now, home game against Wealdstone on Saturday, psychologically, it's a big game for both sides. They're 2 points behind you, a game in hand. Have you had a chance to do your homework on them and do your own work with your own team?
Yes, of course, yeah. And it's been full on for, like I say, the last 4 or 5 days. So, yeah, I've watched their last two games back. I've watched our last games back. And, you know, doing the homework on individuals as well as the team, and you know, we'll be well prepared and ready to go out and try and perform to the best of our abilities as far as the time I've had to be able to sort of get to know the players and the football club. But we tried to leave no stone unturned, and that's used a lot, I know, but I'm very meticulous in the way I like to work, and I think that's hopefully something that can rub off onto the players as well.
Yeah, and obviously, Eastleigh are a full-time club in the National League. So, what are the big differences that from stepping down from Crawley back to Eastleigh? Are resources a similar sort of strength?
Yeah, to be honest, it's none. I mean, I don't know if you've been to Eastleigh recently, or for people that haven't been to Eastleigh recently in the last couple of years, they've really improved the ground, new restaurants, new bars. You know, glass going right along the back of the goal, which is one big long restaurant and bar. You know, commercially, it's gone up a level. There's a lot of fans there these days, as I say. So, yeah, there's certainly trying behind the scenes to improve the club. And it's going to be my job to try and improve the team, you know, on the grass to go alongside that.
Yeah, and certainly another example, I think, where non-league is able to compete, if not even better, what the Football League are offering.
Definitely. I mean, there's no real difference, to be honest. And I mean, our training facilities better than what they have at Crawley. We have grass pitches and 3G pitches available, brand new facility next door to the club. You know, we have two full-time chefs there that do the food, breakfast and food for the boys in the afternoon. We've got a gym on site. We've got a full gym that we can use down the road. All the players get to use. You know, the setup is there, and you know, it takes a lot of organising that and a lot of hard work over the years. So, you know, fair play to everyone that's had a hand in that at Eastleigh. So, I'm just reaping the benefits of that now.
Reaping the benefits, and the man that can push the button to take it a bit further. Lee, it's great to have you back involved at a non-league level. I wish you well at the weekend and for the rest of the season, and hopefully we'll speak to you again very soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, our next guest, this is a bit of a double-pronged approach, or maybe even a three-pronged one. That I guess one of the greatest things about being involved in non-league football is the friendships you create. Some are the classic mate friendship. You have a drink, have a laugh with somebody every weekend at football. Yet in reality, you probably know next to nothing or maybe little about them. Some are then the classic long-term friends, often their opposition. You may catch up with them once or twice a year, can always pick it up, continue to banter, and you know that the two of you always have that mutual bond about being part of the non-league family. And Well, my next guest is probably somewhere in between the two of them. We met through rival clubs, possibly maybe a couple of decades ago now, and we've stayed in touch ever since, keeping an eye on how life treats us. And I present him to you this week to chat about a couple of ventures that probably exemplify more than what I've just said about the power that non-league family bond brings. It's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show from Where's the Bar, Mr. Roger Slater. Welcome, Roger.
Thanks, Tim. Good to speak to you again.
Well, it's always a pleasure. We could speak forever. We've spoken forever before this, and we probably will continue after we've done this. But I wanted to get you on. Now, despite that rambling intro, that the audience is none the wiser. Where's the Bar? With my orange safety officer jacket on a match day, that's probably the most often heard phrase I get. And now, or once again, it's also a print publication for non-league football fans, a fan's eye view of non-league football. Description-wise, is it a magazine or is it a fanzine? What is it?
Yes, is the answer. It's a reincarnation. The very first Where's the Bar was produced in the early 90s by a guy called Martin Lacey, who was originally involved in a fanzine at Wealdstone called the Elmsley Ender. Where's the Bar was a slightly more national progression of that hung around for a couple of years in the early 90s, disappeared. It is now back. Nicely titled as Volume 2 to follow on from the original. It aims to be informative, entertaining. It can be a bit angsty, no doubt, as we progress after the two issues that are out. It will become even more angsty in some areas, but it's not club-specific. I think there's lots of fanzines out there that, you know, they rotate solely around your football club. They sell 100 or 1,000 copies and everybody at one end of the ground laughs at it and everybody at the other end of the ground wonders what the fuss is about. We try and breach that gap, if you like. We have a bit of history in it. We have some overseas stuff. It's really what people want to write. If they've got a story, they can tell us, and it is in their own words. I mean, we may tidy up some of the English and tweak a bit here and there, but nothing in the two issues that have come out has been, well, actually, firstly, nothing's been refused. Secondly, nothing has been returned to sender for a rewrite, because we want it to be what the fans see and think and feel and say. It's not about match reports. It's not current because we're at the moment round about a quarterly issue. You can't be current in a quarterly magazine because as soon as you've started to write something, it's almost out of date, particularly with technology as it is. We hope it's entertaining. We hope it's a bit biased and people raise an eyebrow. And certainly I've written some pieces in there that are likely to be contentious with some people. That's not being intentionally off the wall. It's just I picked one opinion. My thought is that if that's published and somebody sits in a pub discussing it with their mates, then it's done its job. It's you know, it becomes a focus. If they want to write from the other side of an argument, we're more than happy to take them on board.
And that's the power of journalism, isn't it? And having written a piece for the non-league paper the other week about ground grading and probably received calls from every ground grader in the country that had my number. I can see exactly where you're coming from. It's about creating the debate, isn't it? And what I love is it's different from what we have out there at the moment. There are multiple clones of this show and the like. There's multiple online news channels, as you say. There's social media. There's the sterling work of the non-league paper. There's various non-league bloggers. But in many cases, it's the longer form of stories, the thoughts and opinions. They don't get a chance to shine. You know, we live in a very short sort of, you know, lack of attention. And that's never been something associated with non-league football. We love the clips of videos and all that sort of thing. But we're there to absorb the day as a non-league fan. You're properly part. Your non-league club is your non-league club, whatever day of the week it is. And I love the fact that if you don't mind me saying this, I'm a lover of documentaries. And Where's the Bar to me is almost like a documentary, and it sits proudly in that sort of position where it's more informed, it's longer form stuff, and it's about football at non-league level that we don't get elsewhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we have a little group of us that travel to away games, and obviously from Wealdstone, who I follow, and the football, the actual 90 minutes of the game is often an irrelevance. I mean, it's great when you're top of the league and you're winning every week. It's even great when you're bottom of the league and you're losing every week, because at least there's something to fight for. When you just turn up for those other 14 out of 15 seasons and 35 of the 42 games actually really haven't got a lot on them, the first question generally is, where's the bar? And if it wasn't little groups of people sitting, talking about what they saw at this club, what they did at that club, do you remember this day out? Do you remember that day out? Well, one, the bars would all be empty, and two, non-league football would probably die on its backside. I mean, it's, you know, you've got Twitter, where the lifespan of a tweet on an average timeline is, what, 30 seconds? Because nobody scrolls back through the last 200 tweets to see what was there. You know, Facebook, Instagram, they're all a bit longer in the mind. But, you know, we have generations now that think history started 3 weeks ago. So if we can give them something a little bit more tangible, a little bit more long-lasting, and enough that maybe it starts some of those conversations and they tell their mates, great. We're filling a gap. Lots of the people that contribute are bloggers. They're people that I've come across through the internet, some through knowing their football clubs, as I did with you guys and Yedding in the early days. And I badger them and I say, right, we've got a deadline at the end of March, need another article, go and write away about something. And if it's entertaining enough, it comes in. But equally, we can highlight something that's a bit different that people won't see. The classic in this latest issue is the piece by Sam Akers. Yeah. Who's an 18-year-old quadriplegic coach in non-league football. You're not going to find many of those about. We think he's the first. He's not at Wealdstone. He's a Wealdstone fan and has followed us for years, but he's at Beaconsfield. He's going through their academy system. He's been on the bench a couple of times with the first team now. And he told me his story. I've known him since he was six. And I thought it'd be good to get it out there. He's getting some great feedback. And in the nicest possible way, it's probably given him a boost as well. You know, he was a bit unsure. But we're a medium that can do that. If you give me 1,000 words on why Yedding are going to play in pink and purple stripes next season with green shorts,
that would be far too political.
Yeah, but it'd start some conversations, wouldn't it?
I love the Sam piece, because we're always talking about why are we still involved in non-league football? You know, but non-league does change your life, and I think Sam's example there is fantastic from his love of football and his family's love of football and how he just couldn't get involved in it. Just by chance, really, he sort of sent an email off and he got on the academy program. And as you say, it's put a smile on his face, but I'm sure reading that article has put a smile on lots of other people's faces about the magic of non-league.
Yeah, I hope so. We've certainly had some decent feedback, and you know, on social media, people have mentioned that Sam's article. I posted a couple of pictures of the article with a cover, really, as an advert. Sam followed it up and said he was really pleased to get involved with the magazine. And got 40 or 50 responses from, some from people he did know, some from people he doesn't know, saying sort of, well done, more power to your elbows. So, and it's great. I mean, I was chatting to him the game before last, and he's still grounded. He's still Sam, but he's loving it. Mm. And he's loving being involved in the game that he loves. And I'm not going to correct you, but I'll comment on one thing. You said non-league football changes your life. Nah. Not if you do it properly. Non-league football is your bloody life.
There's the t-shirt. There's the t-shirt. You mentioned, you know, some of the other people that, you know, I feel like I've grown up with, really. You know, Steve Jimman from Maidenhead, Trevor Nell, obviously, we've all been reading his blogs over lockdown to keep us occupied. And just in issue two alone, there's also a bit on the resurgence of Darlington, the new ground at York City, and even North Wales is covered up with Barla Town. There's also a piece on the Football and War Network, and that's another reason to get you on and talk. You've got a very big event planned for next month at Wealdstone with that organisation. The Football and War Network began, I believe, not in academia, but that's where it is now, based out of University of Wolverhampton. And I think in my understanding, it celebrates, it collates, it researches the influence, impact, and, well, intertwining of football and the war. And it's somewhat timely in the troubled times we currently live in.
And, well, indeed. I mean, you may have seen a tweet that went out this morning, sadly, about the first two Ukrainian footballers that are killed in the conflict. Yeah. Obviously very relevant to the time and very, very relevant to football and war. I've not been in it since the beginning. It's been running about 3 or 4 years. Really, I think, as a follow-on to a lot of football clubs recognising their history in the time of the centenary end of the First World War. Suddenly a lot of clubs recovered pieces of the history that they had lost and made new people aware. We did at Wealdstone. I did a new memorial for the club. And in fact, I'd researched both First and Second World War fallen for a couple of booklets, because the First World War primarily has been a hobby of mine for a number of years. I actually found two people that the football club hadn't previously recognised, and both former players. And without going through the very long spiel, there were reasons why they hadn't been recognised, but they are now named on the new memorial. That, a couple of years later, got me involved in the network. We have a guy that follows Wealdstone and also follows Chelsea, a guy called Nathan Whitehouse, who is part of the Chelsea Football Club Graves Society. And they're documenting all Chelsea graves, taking photographs, getting in touch with families and such like. He knew of the Football and War Network. He'd been in discussion with them about getting a seminar at Chelsea. They've done previous ones at Dulwich and Exeter. We had one at Wealdstone back in November, actually, the first one we did. He introduced me on the basis of what I did with Wealdstone. And I say we ran a seminar back in November, in which I sort of led the conversation, if you like. I went through the research for the two booklets on Our War Dead and how I found these missing names and how I corrected a number of mistakes. I mean, we had, I think, two that were recorded with the wrong initials. One was recorded as Dickie, as a Christian name, Richard. In fact, that was his middle name. His actual name is George. And, you know, it took a few years of research to actually dot the I's and cross the T's and correct the errors of the past. But the salient point, I finished my little presentation at the last seminar, and I actually said, this is history. I can't write it. I can only record it. And as a warning to all the people there, I said, if you are doing something about the history of your family, the history of the football club, whatever else, don't be afraid to change it, because there is always new information. The new things come to light and it can correct an old error and whatever. So we've developed that process, the now post-COVID, and with the university, we're moving forward. And as you say, the next seminar is on April the 12th at Wealdstone. We have Phil Annett, who's just published 150 years, the FA Cup stats and facts. He's going to speak. We have a guy called Jeff Williamson, who's lost heroes of the First World War, lost football heroes of the First World War, sorry, is available. He's going to speak. Nathan from Chelsea Wargraves is going to speak. And never liking to be left out, you know that, Tim, I thought, well, you know what, I can do another little one, can't I?
So, quite shy and retiring, really.
Oh, all the time. Yeah, yeah. I retired years ago. I'm presenting Harry Spud Taylor's Cup Final, which is an interesting story in itself. I got dug into sports in prisoner of war camps. And along came an item in an auction about 4 or 5 weeks ago, which is a runners-up shield for a cup final, a program, a medal, and a cigarette box engraved with all the names of the players. So I bought it. Turns out it was owned by Harry Spud Taylor. The cup final was played on June the 10th, 1944, in Stalag 4B in the east of Germany. He played for Liverpool against another Hutt team that were named Newport. Newport won it 2-1. This auction item was actually was put on the market by his nephew. The nephew's father, Harry's brother, was also a prisoner of war and a good sportsman who played in a number of in-camp internationals where there were sufficient representatives of half a dozen different Commonwealth and allied countries, and they would play football matches against each other, and they printed little match programs and all sorts. And I'm very proud to have got the one that I'll be taking along on the night for people to have a look at and see what's what. So again, an interesting story. I'm still researching. Funnily enough, not 10 minutes before you came on the phone, I had a couple of emails from the nephew, who sent me a couple of press cuttings and a few little bits more. His father actually kept a record of all the football and cricket matches he played in German prisoner of war camps during the Second World War, and I now have scans of them.
Brilliant.
Just stunning records. So an interesting little filler, but it's a fantastic network. I mean, when you consider, I've spoken to a couple of other football clubs this week, one from the pro game, one from the non-league game, who have war history, if you like, mm-hmm. In the simplest of terms. They're both keen to run seminars later this year. If anyone listening to this thinks that they have a story or their club has a story, have a look at the site. It's Football at War at the University of Wolverhampton. We'll find it on the internet. There's a blog site on there, so you can present your story for the blog. You can detail it a little bit further, get in touch and see whether we can bring a seminar to you. There's no cost. It's for, you know, the clubs get the benefit. We turn up, you give us a room, there's a bar in the room, you get the bar takings, we present to a nice audience for a couple of hours and walk away. And everybody will learn something. I mean, including us. I mean, you do continue to find new things.
And you would have, I don't know whether you would have seen out of your window today, we've had kids walking up and down roads, going to school on World Book Day, celebrating, you know, what they've read. And there's so much history out there that we need to get them to read. We need to get people to save and learn about these stories, because otherwise they will get lost.
Do you know the most important thing? Yeah. We don't have World Kindle Day. It is so much more satisfying. There's a place for Kindles. I read a Kindle on the train. I read it when I go abroad. It's lighter than flying away with a suitcase full of books. But I've read a book on a Kindle, thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'll go out and buy the book. Copy in a second-hand shop, and I'll read it again. It's a different book. They're never the same when you read them on paper. There's just something about them that, I don't know, maybe it makes the point hit home a bit more. We spend our lives looking at computer screens, don't we? And it actually is nice to pick up a tangible piece of paper, something you can fold and bend and shove in a pocket. And yeah, great stuff. And yeah, long may it last.
I can already hear the debate about electronic programs and real programs are kicking off in the background there. You've mentioned how people can get involved, maybe with the network and get their club involved there. But this Football at War London seminar being hosted at Wildstone FC on Tuesday the 12th of April in the evening. It's a free event, isn't it? But people should book tickets in advance.
Yes, there's a link on the poster, and I pushed the link out on Twitter. The reason for that is no other reason, really, that we don't want 500 people trying to get in a hall that only holds 200. But it also means that if we have 200 there, I've got more than two bar staff on. So it's purely so we can predict an approximate number and make sure that everyone's comfortable and it's a good evening. It's nothing more than that. You don't have to register online. We prefer it. Yeah. It's a purely an ease of access thing for us.
And then I guess people will be able to pick up a copy of Where's the Bar there. But if they can't make that event, how can they get hold of a copy? How can they get in contact?
Okay, well, in respect of the event, there will be copies of both the FA Cup book and Jeff's book, probably my brochures and Where's the Bar on the evening. If you want to buy a copy of the Where's the Bar now, it's available on the Wealdstone Football Club Supporters Club, the WFC Megastore website. It's also available direct from us at Where's the Bar, just as one word, no apostrophe, so where'sthebar.co.uk. And if you buy it on the site at the moment, you can also get a free copy of the last few copies we've got left of issue one. It's a slight increase in the postage because of the weight, but you can actually get two copies for the price of one. At the moment, it's also going out to a number of football clubs. We're sending out sort of batches of 10 copies to a number of club shops to see if they're interested in taking it and spreading the word. If anyone would like to write for Where's the Bar and thinks they've got a story, if they'd like to email me on dadstory, dadstory, at btinternet.com, I'll ping them back some details. Since I published that link 10 days, 12 days ago, we've had two new contributors come in who will have articles in issue three. So we're all ears. This magazine will work the more people that get involved with it. It's as simple as that. And if it starts to get to a point where it's making money, everyone involved in it, and that includes the writers, will be paid for their efforts. At the moment, all we're doing is paying the print bill.
paying the bills. It sounds so much like our normal conversations about non-league football clubs.
Who never pay the bills, of course.
Roger, I've taken up far too much of your time. It's been entertaining, informative, educational, everything I wanted it to be, apart from the taste of beer, which is where I'd rather have had this conversation. But obviously, not everybody else would have been able to enjoy it as well. Roger Slater from Where's the Bar, and Football and Law History Network. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Tim, an absolute pleasure as always, and I look forward to that next pint we share, mate.
So let's round off this week's news and time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Yeah. It's an interesting week. We're speaking, a couple of hours before Boreham Wood take on Everton in the FA Cup, which has obviously taken up much attention. So, certainly, suddenly the national media, international media knows what non-league's about. Oh, no, they don't, but they're reporting that they do anyway. It's been given much attention. But in terms of news this week, it's been fairly quiet. Lots of postponements, which is been a worry, and also lots of pictures of grounds very cut up by the wet weather, particularly when a game's been played on them. Suddenly, I think all those with the 3G pitches have grown even wider smiles.
I was talking to a manager recently, and who remain nameless, but still not a fan of 3G pitches. But as you say, for some clubs now, where they can kind of get through this period, kind of up. Worrying about it too much is, obviously, and there's all the other benefits of having it in their communities. But yeah, it's a big thing, and that's why picture games are often selected from the non-league paper on at times around this time of year for 3G, because you know it's going to be on. You're not going to make any last minute decisions on a Saturday. But yeah, it's all part of the fun. I think actually, looking at some of the pitches I've seen this season, they've been in fantastic nick, and see how the grounds people were working on them, and I think that was one of the things of kind of lockdown, wasn't it? And all that came with that, everyone had a great chance to work on their pitch. So there's some really great surfaces around as well, but it's kind of that kind of a tricky one. I mean, even looking some of the teams in the football leagues, looking at Sheffield Wednesday's pitch the other night, and it's not in good condition, which kind of shows. I know Chesterfield having issues with theirs as well, but it's it's one of those things that we often overlook, isn't it? The quality of pitches.
We talk about how technology and modern science and all that has sort of been used on the field, but off the field as well. I think we've got volunteer groundsmen up and down the country that have probably got more scientific knowledge than most of us came out of school with.
Yeah, definitely. And you say about Bournemouth, their pitch is just incredible, and it's not like they're playing it. Obviously, playing at Goodison Park, aren't they? They've got one of the best surfaces in the league. But it's just everything's kind of moved on completely. I think that's one of those kind of things that people maybe don't always on the outside don't really sort of think about in non-league. It's kind of there is that sort of you say about that kind of stereotype that's probably been coming around the Bournemouth game at the moment, and kind of what the level the players are at, but how good some of the surfaces are in non-league, and how good they how much sort of care is put into them, and effort and resource, and that's a kind of helping the product on a Saturday, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, and it's certainly making a difference there. And talking to groundsmen as well, talking about the different sciences or different ways of playing. I feel for the groundsmen when they see a game that's been played. I think in old school football boots with a few prongs on the bottom don't seem to make as much of a mess as bladed football boots. So it's sort of scythe the top of the turf off, and I think that's the biggest frustration at the moment, and the biggest problem facing non-league groundsmen is trying to put these pitches back together after a Tuesday night or Wednesday night game in time to play again on a Wednesday.
Yeah, that's the thing. The games are so thick and fast. I mean, most of them should be thankful that I haven't got me playing on them and sort of taking great divots out of the pitch as well. As
I'm sure you put all your divots back.
Ball playing right back in my in my Fleet Spurs days. So, it is interesting. Oh, yeah, like you said, the technology and all the different things, boots and things as well, how that's come on in recent years. I don't sort of envy groundspeople at this time of year, because it's a tough old gig that, and they often get a bit of stick when it's not quite right, and people don't kind of always mention it when they have done a really good job. So all hail the groundsmen around the country.
Indeed. And whilst it may not have been much use, there were some pretty sizable changes on the seats on the managerial merry-go-round this week. We've spoken earlier in the show with new Eastleigh boss Lee Bradbury, and it's great to have him back involved at non-league level, and his organisation, his attention to detail and sort of trying to get the best out of players, I think that's going to be a great asset to Eastleigh and also the National League. But on the same day, we also learned of the demise of Alan Dowson at Woking. And there'd been some fan unrest after a run of results. And I guess at one point that the club were maybe up there thinking, could they challenge at the top of the National League at the early part of the season? But surely, realistically, nobody expected them to be challenging hard for the playoffs at the moment. And I look at the statistics. It's at what, 7 games without a win, 16 defeats in their last 24 games. It doesn't sound great, but it's also a case of who you play when. And under Dowson, despite being 11 points off the drop zone, I didn't see relegation as a concern. Now they're managerless, I think that risk has maybe gone up. And if Weymouth were to hit a run of form,
yeah, I think it's as you say. I mean, kind of the club's in a bit of a transition period, isn't it, where they're kind of moving to this more sort of full-time model. And Dowse went in there in a pretty tricky situation after being relegated in the National League into National League South. He got them up at the after the first attempt, let's not forget, against they were going against Torquay that year, who were obviously stayed full-time and were flying as well. So the thing about Alan Dowson, he will be back somewhere and he will have a team challenging wherever that may be. His kind of record speaks for itself. I'm pretty sure in saying that he's every club he's been at, he's got promoted. he's been around long enough to kind of know what it's all about. And I had a conversation with him before where he sort of says about people who talk about projects and this kind of thing, and he sort of acknowledges that, you know, if you don't win the next five games, then you're going to be in a bit of a tricky situation. Obviously, kind of that's what sort of happened at Woking. But yeah, I mean, kind of where in that division against kind of some of those clubs with some of the money that's been thrown around, kind of where can, what is the realistic expectation? And yes, the club wants to be kind of pushing on, and I get that. And I know the fans will be going every week. Will have, you know, they're right to kind of their views on it. But you know, it's going to take time. It's going to take time for them to be kind of pushing up in that into that conversation a bit more, where people are really, you know, we talk about how open the league is, but realistically, it's not easy to get into that, even into that top seven. So. It's a shame to see Dowse go. I think, you know, a lot of the other stuff he's kind of done off the pitch as well is all well known. He doesn't just come and manage a football club. He does a whole lot more than that, and does a lot of fundraising and brings in lots of other money, you know, money to the club. You know, he did that at Hampton. He did that when he's at Kingstonian as well. I mean, sort of getting down to often persuaded to. For the paper to buy a table down at Kingstonian and go down to an evening, he was sort of like putting on to Barry Fry every once down there. And, you know, he's a real sort of character, Dowse, and he knows the game inside out. I'm absolutely sure he'll be back. And yeah, I know I've sort of seen, I imagine he sort of feels a bit hard done by about the money. They have quite a bit of money. Tavon Campbell recently moving on into the Football League and, with some other players go on, so you know, he can walk away definitely with his head held high, and I'm sure he'll be back. And Woking obviously say perhaps it's right time for change, and time will sort of tell on that. It's kind of one of those where, you know, they need to get someone in, I guess pretty quickly to make sure that they don't sort of slip down any further. You know, I can't realistically see that happening, but you never know. I mean, they sort of serve a squad there that should keep them clear of it, but it's not a good run that they're on. There's no hiding from that. And getting someone in soon will be a priority.
Mm. Yeah, it's just one of those sort of bizarre time. It just sort of took us all came out of the blue, really. I think Dowse has suggested that it came out of the blue for him as well. Woking have got a trip on Saturday up to Grimsby Town, who are sort of pushing for the playoffs themselves. And I was looking at some of the stats, and I think in the last 10 games that the two sides have met, Woking have lost 9 of those and only drawn 1. So if you were going into a game where you maybe needed all your troops lined up, it just seemed a strange one to go into. But obviously, you know, they think that change needs to be made, and it might be. You know, we've spoken to Lee Bradbury. He seems to think Eastleigh, they're just above Woking. He's got time to plan, have a look, see what he's got this year ahead for next year. So maybe that's the thinking behind it at Woking, is that they can bring in a new manager in the next week or so, maybe, and give them time to bed in, ready for a proper attempt next year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, that's kind of, I guess, who the new man is. We'll be thinking that as well, and you know, there's lots of good managers out there who are unemployed and will fancy that job. You know, the people will want to go to that club, and you know, see sort of kind of the attendances have been like this season, and that side of it. And you know, it's one of those things with Dowse. If he was out of work and he wasn't, you know, and they were looking for a manager, he's someone that kind of would be mentioned in the conversation about that. And I think not all that long ago, there was kind of talk about they've been approached by a Football League club possibly to talk to him as well earlier this season. So that, you know, he's one of those managers that, you know, has a big impact on the club, and you know, whoever comes in will similarly want to do that. And so if Lee going back to Eastleigh, he's thinking the same. He sort of kind of looks at that squad and they probably need a few more players in at Eastleigh to kind of increase the competition for places. But I think he's also looking ahead to next year, and he's kind of said that he's telling players they're playing for contracts, whether it's at that club or elsewhere, and you know, there's still plenty to play for. I think obviously you need a couple more wins possibly to be fully safe and make sure that they're definitely in the National League next season. But you know, a manager again who's still quite young, but he's done an awful lot in his managerial career. Obviously, he's had his promotions with Havant and Waterlooville. Back-to-back promotions from the Isthmian and the National League South. So he's had a little bit of time kind of out of the number one spotlight as assistant at Crawley, but yeah, it's an opportunity to go to Eastleigh and see everyone knows where they kind of want to end up eventually. Would have been too good for him to pass by.
Yeah, I like the fact that you mentioned that Lee Bradbury was still quite young because I think we're the same age, so that makes me feel better.
Wow, cool. I wouldn't have said that if I'd known.
And you were talking about new managers coming in. At the top of the National League, Chesterfield's midweek win over Notts County was a big one, especially, I think they came from behind in that game as well. But it's been a tough intro there for Paul Cook, and it will give them much confidence because they've got Southend, the visitors, this weekend, who are still on the... Yeah, still one of the informed teams, and you know, I think probably the playoffs are too far beyond them. But yeah, who knows if they could put a run together? So a tough game coming up for Chesterfield this weekend.
Yeah, big win on Tuesday night. You say they were behind. Big crowd. I think it was just under 8,000 there on Tuesday night. Shows the sort of the size of those two clubs, and. You know, crucial, you know, this stage of season is just try and keep Stockport kind of in check. Obviously, Wrexham are flying at the moment as well. Stockport kind of been having a few weeks where they've not been playing, but results have been going for them in midweeks, and they've kind of been having a good Tuesday night without even having to kick a ball. So, that was a pretty big win. Obviously, a bit of a blow for Notts County. And I was sort of seeing Ian Birchnell, manager afterwards, head coach afterwards, saying he had no complaints. So, it was a big win. Obviously, Chesterfield lost, you know, since Paul Cook's come in his first games, lose your top goal scorer, Kari Shimanga, and not just the top goal scorer, but scoring so many of their goals as well. I mean, I think the next highest scorer at that time was on 5, so I think he was on 25 in all competitions. So that kind of just shows his importance to how important he was to the team, and you lose that straight away, and that's, you know, that's kind of a gap that's almost impossible to fill. So it was a very big win, you know, for not only for Paul Cook, but for the fans as well, kind of get that bit of optimism back in there, because one of the results haven't been sort of not been like terrible by any stretch or bad by any stretch, you know, they're just wins like that against so big rivals are huge. But as you say, Southend on Saturday, and they are ticking along very nicely now, and kind of whether the playoffs, as you say, are a little bit too far, they kind of it's a reminder of Leighton Orient when they in their first season came down, struggled a little bit, got going towards the end, and then could say, right, let's really kind of plan, get everything in place for next season and have a real go at it. And obviously that's what they did, and they went and won the league. So it's kind of sort of a familiar feel to what's going on down there. But obviously at the moment, what points to play for, they're going to be trying to get in those players if they possibly can. I think Neil Ardley had a piece in the paper last week, Solihull Moors manager Neil Ardley, saying he's overachieved to get in the playoffs this year because the sort of standards so high and the points total's going to be so high to kind of get in there. So it's there's a lot left to run in this race for sure.
Yes, a lot left. I'm looking at the three big midweek games next week as well. Next Tuesday evening, you've got you say Solihull Moors against Notts County, which is what, 6th and 7th place at the moment. You've got Wrexham facing Boreham Wood, which is what, 3rd and 4th place at the moment. And then you've got the two playoff dreamers, Southend United and Grimsby Town.
Yeah, this is what we get into the exciting part of the season now, and I think this is what we, as we said before, we kind of missed. Missed last year and the year before. These huge games kind of keep coming along, you know, really quick succession, and fans in the grounds and kind of everything that comes with it. And this is kind of why we love watching this level of the game, because of these occasions. You know, it goes right through all the leagues as well. You know, we get to this sort of really exciting part of the season where it does really matter, and how you turn up on a Tuesday night after a tough Saturday game is crucial and goes a long way into deciding, you know, titles and who finishes playoff relegations. It's that, you know, really enjoyable part of the season. I'm just sort of so glad it's back.
Yeah, and yeah, as you say, the season is coming drawing to an end, and we'll talk FA Trophy and FA Vars next week. And but I think we should probably celebrate the 10 lots of £10,000 bursaries handed out by the sponsors Build Base in building materials under their club renovation programme this week. What was it? Mossley, Tiverton Town, Tooting and Mitcham, Prescott Table Cables, Bishop Stortford, Fleet Spurs, Sandbach United, Harrowby United, and Amersham Town all soon, I'm sure, will be getting underway with the renovation of their facilities. And it's an important give back, isn't it, to non-league? Because I'm sure Build Base have had some decent coverage from their sponsorship over the years.
Yeah, so I've mentioned Fleet Spurs earlier, and obviously played for them when I was a younger boy.
I'm not sure there's going to be a blue plaque up there.
So they can, well, you know, I think, you know, maybe they can. But, you know, can that maybe some of that money go towards a nice little plaque or something? I don't know, for sort of the entirely forgettable career that I would have had down there.
They're still putting the pitch back together.
But yeah, they're filling those divots from the, you know, on the in the 18. You know, I think they used to play in the A team anyway. I think it's made the reserves, but yeah, you know, they're from a different pitch. But I think, you know, that kind of, you know, knowing a club like that and all these clubs. That kind of money, and you know, to buy and to get that sort of resource is just, you know, invaluable. And you know what they can do with that, what it will mean for each club. Each club's kind of got their own story with that, haven't they? What they want, what they're trying to do, how they can improve their facilities, and that is, you know, in these times particularly where it's not easy, you know, not easy to come by that kind of resource very easily, is great. And it shows, as you say, Build Base. Part of their sponsorship of the trophy and the Vars and kind of everything they do with that. And they've been sort of great supporters of us as well, the paper and our National Game Awards. So, you know, this is kind of tangible, important stuff. It's not just kind of money that goes into clubs that kind of can sit there or be whittled away on wages and things like that. This is going into kind of the bricks and mortar of the club that will hopefully push all these clubs on. And that's why they're also keen to kind of get involved with it, I guess.
Yeah, and I bang that drum again. I think, yeah, maybe the FA needs to look at this from a prize money point of view again. Is that, you know, if that money goes into, as you say, tangible stuff, a proper project rather than just a cheque or it was probably a bank transfer in the modern era that arrives in a club bank account, it's more likely to be put to greater long-term use, I think, if it comes in this way, like Build Base have done in supporting the clubs this way.
Yeah, I think, as you say, that's that long-term is the key, isn't it? It's, you know, and this won't just have an impact in the next couple of years. It can, you know, can help these clubs push forward in their community, you know, years to come. Kind of when the people at the clubs now have moved on and long gone, you know, so that's why it's important. You've got to keep, you know, update facilities. You know, we all love, you know, that non-league sort of feel at clubs, and you know, all these, you know, rustic feel, nothing, you know, romantic sort of side of it. But you know, clubs do need to improve their facilities, and any help they can get, that's hugely important.
Yeah. So I've kept you on far too long already, Matt. There's plenty going on. What else can we expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Well, as soon as we're going out Friday morning, we'll be talking about Bournemouth's win at Everton.
Well, I mean, technically, they're already in the next round anyway, because they, yeah, we're talking
draws before, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, fingers crossed they will be there, because I can, you know, abuse a few family members that are Everton fans. But
yeah, well, we've got John Couch's going. He's probably, as we speak, on his way up to Goodison Park, and I know he's pretty keen. If Fulham would win, he'll rename it Woodison Park. But so we've got a nice reaction from there. I say nice reaction. I haven't seen his copy yet. It might be terrible, but no, I'm sure it'll be good. Couch is up there to have a watch of that. So, a reaction from the Bournemouth Everton game. Obviously, Lee Bradbury, Mike Sales, we've spoken to Lee about coming back into Eastleigh. We have got looking ahead to the FA Trophy and FA Vars games next week. Spoken to John Askey at York. York flying at the moment. I think they're 7 unbeaten in all competitions. They're going down to Dagenham next Saturday with subsidised coaches by their clubs. They have a big following down there. Obviously, York fans know all about the trophy. They won it twice in the last 10 years in different circumstances. I think it's in 2012. they won it on their way as they then went on and won promotion into the Football League, to the double, and then kind of a few years ago when they won it again, it was actually after relegation. So it's kind of a weird kind of history that they have with it, but they're going well. You know, looking ahead to the FA Cups as well. FA Phil Nett's sort of FA Cup Fat File fame is as doing as FA Vars Fat File, so lots going in there as well. Tony and Chenzo's column, and lots of other stuff. It's gonna be it's a busy old week, this one. And obviously all the big games on Saturday as well. So lots to look forward to in shops on Sunday.
And we look forward to reading it on the Sundays. Sometimes I have to roll a little bit over to Monday as well, just to make sure that the week starts as it should, with a proper non-league boost. Matt Babcock, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks very much.
And that's it for this week. A slightly different dynamic this week. I think trying to cover stories in a slightly different way, some slightly different stories as well, and just show the true breadth of a non-league football and the reasons that we love it. Thank you to all of my guests as ever. Thank you to everybody for listening, and again, thank you for all your kind comments that we get throughout the week via various channels, because you can follow us throughout the season and joining throughout the week on social media at Non League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. Send us story ideas if you want us to talk to your club, and there's a particular reason, or you think a slight angle, then please do get in contact. I try and keep abreast of as much as possible and try and bring you some slightly different stories from the others that are out there, but again, always open to new ideas and contributions as well. As ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom and on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Castbox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, thank you, and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA.